Hare Krishna, this is Dhanadhar Swami.
Jai Maharaj.
Okay, give me just a minute to set up here and get the verse of today. Okay. One second, I'm having problems getting the iPod to go on for some reason. One second, I have to get something. Somehow or other, I'm trying to. I have the book that I'm speaking on a iPad. I'm trying to figure out how to get it on. So just hold on with me. It's a little embarrassing. Maybe it just needs to charge up. I just don't understand it. But I'll just begin speaking and maybe we'll just have questions if I can't get the book going. But Om Jnana Timuram Dasya Jnanam Jana Shalakaya Saksu Indamitam Yena Tasmai Si Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Apitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Sadamayam Dati sa padantikam Pancha kopa tarupyascha Kripa sindhu bhaye vacha Patitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siyadvaita Gadadha Sivasade Gaurabhakta Brinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama Rama, Rama, Hare Hare. So greetings from New Jersey. I'm just seeing maybe it just needs to charge or something else, but I really, really wanted to discuss those. I don't think I have a book here in New Jersey. Anyway, yesterday I went to the Rock Theatre. It was quite a wonderful turnout, and one of the most edifying things for me always is when I come, seeing all these nice people that I met in Vrindavan at the Rath Yatra. Just seems like every program, there's at least 7 to 10 or more people that I met on different tours in Vrindavan. And to see them there at the Rath Yatra is quite edifying. And it was really beautiful. I mean, it seemed like 5 times as many people as usually come. At least, I think last year was the first time they came in about 10 years. And there were great kirtans with Bibi Govinda Swami. And the park was absolutely packed with so many people. So I was pretty happy about that. To see that happen, let me try the iPad again. One second. back on. I'm going to try the iPad again. Sorry about this. It's just... One second. Okay, I mean, it looks like I'll just have to talk about something, and unless I can see, maybe there's someplace. Okay. Well, just this week, we're going to talk about Auntie Leela. I can't get the specific verses that I really wanted to go on. I guess there's always obstacles in devotional service or any activity. There are obstacles. And there's tests. And tests reveal our strengths and our weaknesses, but more than revealing our strengths, it's revealing our weaknesses. And understanding one's weaknesses, one can strengthen those areas, which enable one to do greater things. That's the nature of devotional service, that for any activity you need some kind of prerequisites. You know, just like they have these things, the Navy SEALs and these special operation forces, they're trained, there's a lot of tests, and you know, because they have a job that requires so much expertise, they really have to be put to test to see which areas need to be strengthened so that they can meet that test. And it's the same thing with devotional service. When you when you have tests, you're called upon to overcome those tests, to access your abilities, and sometimes realizations are called upon to meet some type of test. So that's always there. The test that I think of most pronouncedly is Sukadeva Goswami, a large cricket in the Bhagavatam. He's going to have to meet the test of death. And to meet the test of death, you require a very, very high level of consciousness and realization. And sometimes we may not understand the difficulty of that test. Just like Srila Prabhupada. I was there in Vrindavan when Srila Prabhupada was coming back for the last time by train from Bombay. I was there when he left Vrindavan for the last time. I was there when he came back to Vrindavan for the last time. And I remember this, when he came in the side gate by the guest house where his house is, the ISKCON guest house, and he was cradled in the arms of Brahmananda, very, you know, Brahmananda 300 times. And he was laying in his arms, he was holding him in his arms, similar to the pose of Haridas Thakur after he left, and Lord Chaitanya carried him to the river. And Prabhupada, so humbly, with his hands folded, said, Krishna tudiya pada pankaja pankaranjam adyeda me vishuti me manaja. I quote this many, many times. Let the swan of my mind, you know, be entangled to lotus at your feet. Otherwise, how at the time of death will I be able to remember you? So Prabhupada was cognizant what the state of the body is when it's, what the state of the body is when it's leaving the, or the state of the mind when it's leaving the body. And the necessity to focus the mind, because whatever the consciousness is at the time of death, that state the mind will go. Space is the index of the mind. Yad yad achirite, no, what is it? Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tajantyam te kalevaram tam tam e kam. Whatever the state of the mind is at the time of death, to that nature you will go. And I've mentioned this, it's not just a passing thought. What you're going to think of is what your bhava is. The bhava or the mindset that you're in can stay steady despite the inability to particularly focus the mind by your determination or will, which is why bhakti is the most powerful process. Because when you get a bhava, it's so much easier to fix the mind than when you have to do it by your determination or will. I know when Prabhupada was there in his last days and he turned to his young disciples and said, don't think this won't happen to you. I'm also becoming a little bit more cognizant. You know what they say, the 30s today are the new 20s. The 40s are the new 30s. So if the 60s, then are the new 50s and 60s. And in Sanskrit, the word 50 means pachas. And what is it? 51 is, I don't know, I forgot the term, something ekavan. And pachas means maybe there's hope. You may feel that. But 51, go to the front, there's no hope. So, you have to cultivate a bhava. You have to cultivate a bhava. You have to cultivate a feeling in the heart for Krishna, a longing for Krishna, a greed for God. That will sustain, despite as said in that verse, how I remembered you when you're filled up with mucus, and how will I remember you? It's just like when someone has an infatuation. They're always focused on that. It doesn't matter if they can control their mind or not. I always give the example of if a sadhu, is teaching meditation, put you in a room, locked you in, and told you that the meditational instructions are on a piece of paper, and the piece of paper said, well, your first instruction to control your mind is that there's a deadly snake in the room. Don't think of that deadly snake. There's an emotion. And this is the glory of bhakti. And we have to cultivate that. We have to cultivate that somehow. And that is the purpose of sadhana bhakti. Sadhana is to fix yourself, it's just a desire for that bhava, for that consuming state of consciousness. Sri Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhava Somati. So the whole mindset has a bhava. It has a particular mood. And there's a whole practice of devotional service which entails giving up offenses. And that bhava only manifests when you step out of the center and put God in the center. We talked about ritual sometimes. Ritual means to conform your life to something greater than yourself. That's the beginning of bhava. The beginning of bhava is to put your body in a place where the mind can activate the particular consciousness. And the mind will not activate in that consciousness of love and devotion if you're not trained to put yourself in a position where that consciousness can arise. That's one of the main relationships with Guru. And that's what Prabhupada taught. And that's the core basis of the consciousness that disciples have. And I was thinking myself, and again, excuse me if I can't get to the verses. I'm what's on my mind and what I am thinking about is that movement of consciousness from self-centeredness to love and devotion, which is antithetical to self-centeredness. That movement of consciousness happens in two ways. One is a mindfulness, a cognizance. And this day, observation of what motivates your thoughts. And it's embarrassing. As we discussed yesterday, doing things in terms of, we discussed the last guy, result-oriented activities, fruitive activities, and doing something because it's right. Doing something out of virtue, which is a core basic shift. Not doing something because it is appealing to my desire, but doing something because there are principles. And there are principles above my desire. Basic dharma. If we reflect on our day, how much of our day is spent in fear, anxiety, ambition, desire, based, rooted in that false conception that's rooting us. I am the control. I'm the enjoyer. I want the world to coincide with my karmic desires. I want to be respected, so I want these people to look at me in a particular way. I want these things because of exploitation. Exploitation is my desire becomes so prominent, I don't mind if it violates the desires and wills of others. Even in a relationship, I think of the book, Eric Fromm, The Art of Loving. Shifting your consciousness to love, even in a core basic way. Living the world and start thinking of what are the needs and considerations of others in your environment, in your relationships. Sometimes I see people make decisions in relationships focused on, I'm not happy. Which is okay, that's fine. But to the exclusion of the welfare and happiness of their own children. Of course, which is extended to the level of abortion. If something is inconvenient for me, let me kill it. That's why sometimes these arguments, the whole concept of pro-choice, it's not the argument. Because we don't have a right for our choices to supersede the life of another. That's the issue that has to be discussed. So this has to be the shift of consciousness. We have to abstract ourselves. We have to observe ourselves. It's such a drive because it is, what is the eighth chapter of Bhagavad Gita? What does the eighth chapter of Bhagavad Gita describe? What is karma? The consciousness by which we get a body, this body is a product of that desire. And the impulses of the body move in that way, which is against our self-interest. The kevatu swartha katim hi vishnu. Prahlad Maharaj, what? The kevatu, they do not understand swartha katim, that the interest, the Tin Vishnu, They don't understand that my swartha, my self-interest, is Vishnu's. And Prabhupada just gave a simple example. I'm not sure he didn't make up the example, but he gave it to us. The interest of the hand is the body. So our interest is God. The table too. Swartha Gatim hi Vishnu. So there must be some cognizance, some understanding of that. That the benefit is in virtue, the benefit is in service, the benefit is in self-sacrifice. And of course, in the bhakti process, you move out of the center by attraction to the center, which is called bhakti, which invokes love and devotion within the heart. So rather than by an act of volition or will, it's by an act of heart, an attraction. So hopefully that was going to be my introduction anyway. And now let me see. I'm completely bewildered. Oh, hey, it went on. How do you like that? Yay. So we can read a verse today. I was going to speak that anyway because it's really something on my mind. When I'm speaking something, I'm speaking of the challenges in my own spiritual life. And it's so connected to the holy name of Krishna. Because you can't lead a selfish life and then sit and focus on the holy name. Because prayer, legitimate prayer, it's like an engine. It needs a fuel. So you begin to chant, but you haven't put in the life of surrender and sacrifice, Guru, Krishna, then you'll begin to chant. There will be no fuel for that prayer. As Bhakti Siddhanta said, chanting cannot be just lip deep. It has to be heart deep. And what's that heart? That heart is how we live our lives. At least we have to control the gross manifestations of selfishness. By not cheating and exploiting others for our own profit and wealth, the benefit, certainly. And then to the more subtle things, where we're even acting in devotional service, to position ourselves for how people look at us, how people respect us, which is related to a core desire to enjoy, which requires the power to control, which comes from how people relate to us and how much they're attracted to our opulences and therefore want to serve. And therefore, it's always beautiful, beautiful to see people who think of others before themselves. I tell you, I read one book on chanting, and just at that point I got. I think a real test in the modern age for that is children. As on the Rathiatra, you know, and I saw different people I knew with young children, right? Their desire may be hankering, let me, you know, socialize and enjoy with everyone else, but their duty meant I have to care for my children. And therefore, it's a real test to develop the pleasure of virtue or service. Okay, somehow I had an introduction like that. So I'm just trying to find the part we're up to by Shukh Damodar saying he's seeing. One second. Okay, so Rupa Goswami, what Chaitanya was telling Sri Damodar about Rupa Goswami and his glories. And then Sri Damodar quoted some Nyaya Shastra, Phalena Phalakaranam, and Umiyate. Well, by seeing the result, one can see the cause of the result. And then he quoted a verse from the But how when people eat, let's read the verse. I'm just getting, he quoted, the river Ganges flowing, and heavenly planets is full of golden lotus flowers. And we, the residents of those planets, eat the stems, the flowers, as it must be Bhagavatam. Thus, we are very beautiful. More so is the law of cause and effect. You eat the right things, it increases the beauty of the body. So that's a fact. How much food affects consciousness, how much consciousness affects the body. And one who lives a pure life, there's a certain effulgence from that. But that's a side point to the point is, when they saw the unique composition of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they can understand from that composition something very, very deep about his own spirituality. Because the composition revealed an understanding of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that could only come from mercy. Remember, I was quoting Bhurijan, when you act in such a way that the heart of a Vaishnav melts, then everything comes. When someone gets that, it says a lot about what his devotion is, what his level of service and humility and dependence is. This Vaishnav, Vaishnavism is personal. Reciprocation is just natural. When you give yourself to someone, they will respond according to the exaltation of that person. Person responds. Krishna himself is glorified among the most, as the full embodiment of God, because he has a heart because he reciprocates fully in all relationships, which God is not able to do when he takes a position that requires the harness of intimacy to satisfy the general view of him as superior. So that Rupa Goswami understood the intimacy of God's heart meant that there was a profound trust for him from Sri Chaitanya because of certain qualities in Sri Rupa Goswami that engendered that trust. And basically it's bhakti. What you want, I will do. If someone's life, if someone loves you so much that they will position their life around your desires with happiness, how much trust will you have in that person? What will you not give that person? And one thing you'll give them is your heart. This is what really moves and touches me. And that's what was given to Rupa Goswami. And he had the inspiration, and he was able to communicate that inspiration. He had the abilities to do so, his artistic, literary talents. You know, I was just reflecting. I saw pictures by this one photographer. And I saw these particular pictures, likes to take pictures of particular places, devotional photographer. But I saw these pictures that he took of one place, which should have been the best place. It just was not up to the standard of other collections of pictures. I don't know, you'd take pictures of the same place that he took. And I understood clearly that for some reason or other, the person wasn't inspired. And therefore, he couldn't. The photography reflected his own vision. When the person's inspired, then the beauty of the place manifests. It's something, and you're not inspired, it doesn't. So art begins with inspiration. When they saw Chaitanya, when they see Rupa Goswami's inspiration, how he can express the glories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they realized that it began in his heart. After the 4 months of Chaturmasa, Shravana, Bhadra, Ashvini, and Kartik, all the Vaishnavas of Bengal returned home, but Sri Rupa Goswami remained in Jagannath Puri under the shelter of the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Others had to return home. I assume they were married. They had their own responsibilities. They were teachers. But now Sri Rupa Goswami has become a complete renunciate. There's no duties in his life other than the direct service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And naturally, he wants to be in his direct association. Ekadina Rupa Karina Nati Kalikana Ashambite Mahaprabhu Haile Agama. One day, while Rupa Goswami was writing his book, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu suddenly appeared. Sambhame Dunhe Uti Dandava Hoila Dunhe Alingya Prabhu Ashane Valila. As soon as Haridas Thakur and Rupa Goswami saw the Lord coming, they both stood up and then fell down to offer their respectful obeisances. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced them both and then sat down. Kapunte Lika Bali Eka Patra Nila Akshara Diki Takiya Prabhu Mani Shuka Haila. The Lord inquired, "What kind of book are you writing?" He held up the palm leaf that was a page of the manuscript. When he saw the fine handwriting, his mind was very pleased. Shilupira akshara yeni mukatara pante pitohaya karina prabhu akshare tsute. Thus being pleased, the Lord praised the writing by saying, "The handwriting of Rupa Goswami is like a row of pearls." There is a connection between handwriting and consciousness. A lot of times, handwriting reflects the mode of nature you're in. And working on your handwriting, because working on it means you can't be impulsive, it can also affect the consciousness. External things very much affect the consciousness. And you can have small victories that actually are very, very powerful. Because Swami's handwriting is in the Vrindavan Research Institute. Se patre prabhu eka shloka yedikala. Andite shloka premeya vishtahoila. We're reading the manuscript. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw a verse on that page. As soon as he read it, he was overwhelmed by ecstatic love. Tunde tandavani vitim. Tunate tandavali labdaye. Kana kroda kandambani gatiyate. Kana bubait. Kana budevyasthiham. Cheta prangana shangani vidyate savandhyanam kritim no jane janita kyadir amritam krishnate divinatve. I can't imagine, I do not know, how much nectar the two syllables Krishna have produced. When the holy name of Krishna is chanted, it appears to dance within the mouth. We then desire many, many mouths. When that name enters the holes of the ears, we desire many millions of ears. And when the holy name dances in the courtyard of the heart, it conquers the activities of the mind, and therefore all the senses become inert. This is from the Dandamadava, seven-act play written by Rupa Goswami, describing the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. It's such a beautiful verse on the holy name. Tunde tandavani ratim vitunate tandavali labdaye karna kroda kandambani patayate karna budhe jasthiham. So, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chanted this verse, Haridas Thakur, on hearing the vibration, began jubilant and began to dance while praising its meaning. Krishna namera mahima shastra sadhu mukhe jani. One has to learn about the beauty and transcendental position of the holy name of Krishna by hearing the revealed scriptures from the mouths of devotees. Nowhere else can we hear of the sweetness of the Lord's holy name. It's the same thing. Without the inspiration, you can't recreate the inspiration, whether it's art, whether it's writing. The one of the key things of writing is called voice. There's a sincerity in it. And therefore, when reading something, you can hear the voice of that person who has that sincerity or commitment. When you write something that you really feel, then when the composition is finished, people can hear your conviction within it. So Rupa Goswami, of course, has this attachment to the holy name. So when he writes this verse, first of all, no one else can write a verse like that. The inspiration to write a verse like that cannot happen unless you have experience and conviction in what you're writing about. Tande tandavani ritin vitinite tandavite tandavali. Anyway, I don't remember it now. So you can't chant with purity without that consciousness, nor can you express it. And therefore, we know that even ordinary chanting, there's such a difference when that chanting is done with conviction. Doesn't matter how beautiful a singer is, if he's doing that chanting and the motive behind the production of that sound is to attract others for one's own respect, it won't have that. It's that conviction. It's a real interesting science how words carry conviction, compositions carry conviction, and therefore they can convince one of that conviction. I'm going to stop here. Anybody like to ask any questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Yeah.
This is Gail.
Yeah. Hare Krishna.
Can you please connect these three words, surrender, dependence, and service? And by surrender, maybe if you define it first, I guess what you want, I will do. I guess that would be surrender. Whatever you want, that's what I want to do.
Well, let me put it this way, is the greatest need is love. And we're more dependent on that than anything else, because it really is what our core essence is. So when one finds that relationship, it's born out of a dependence, out of a real need. And when one has that relationship, it is the sustenance of one's life. Now, surrender means sharanagata. It's where you go for shelter. So it's really the same thing as dependence. you surrender. That's where you fear your shelter is. And because the need is love, love comes in service. And service means surrender. It means you're doing your need, your core dependence is to serve the object of your affection or love. That's your core need, is service. So service, dependence, and surrender, they're all intertwined in the concept of love.
Okay,
thank you.
Much better.
Thank you, Gail. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anybody else like to ask a question or say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Nanda Dulal, Hare Krishna.
Please accept my humble obeisances, Maharaj. I have a small question. I'm a fool, so I have to ask this question. The question is, whole Vedic system, they speak about how to get out of this material world and how to do karma, gyan, bhakti. But what about the spiritual world? We don't have the voluminous instances of devotees, what they are doing. We only hear that once you go, you will be in the eternally blissful and will be with Krishna. That's okay. But that's not enough for somebody aspiring to go there, that, oh, they have to do so many things.
I don't understand your question.
My question is that the whole Vedic system is talking about the material world, that anyway we have come here and we have to go back, and Krishna wants us to go back. Bhagavad Gita was spoken to Arjuna just to get out of his physical identification of the body, then knowledge about him, about Krishna. So what I'm telling you, all the things, everything is to transcend this material conception of life. So about the spiritual conception of life, we don't have voluminous books.
We don't have what?
We have extensive details of in the spiritual life we're going to do, if we can achieve this.
We have a lot of books with details of that. We have a lot of books with details of that. The Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, is all details of what we do when we're in the spiritual world.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very well. Thank you, Nanda Dulal. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj, this is Gordon Bhakta Das.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. Wonderful. Maybe next weekend I may be free to come over. I'll let your wife know.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay, I'm not sure. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Henry, hi, Bo. Nice to see you yesterday. Thank you. Good. Anybody else like to say hello? Yeah, nice parade, wasn't it? Yeah.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Who is that?
Gordon.
Hey, Gordon. Great to hear. I kind of saw you in the Ratiatra in the distance, but I feel like in the Ratiatra, because I'm a sannyasi and I've been around for so many years in New York, I know so many people that haven't seen me, that once you enter into Ratiatra, I feel like it's like I'm a human pinball. You know, because you just go from bounce from one person to another. But I would like to say hello.
You were aiding you were helping a devotee that succumbed to the heat and lost their balance, and you were helping them.
Whoa, that was heavy, boy. Collapse, wow. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. It's Allegra.
Allegra, Hare Krishna. Thank you. It was really wonderful to meet your parents. Thank you.
Yeah, that was great. It was great to talk to you yesterday. Thank you.
Thank you. And you'll send me that picture they took, right?
Oh, of course I will.
Thank you. Great. Good. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay. We'll, I guess, end today. Thank you all. Hare Krishna. Vanshakopa to you.